Hello, everyone. Thanks for giving us your time today. I'm Ian Hamilton in New York, joined by David Heaney from London, broadcasting this episode of VR Download today. It's March 5th, 2024, and I'm wearing a Quest 3. We're live on YouTube and on replay across every podcast platform, and you can support our work directly with membership at uploadvr.com. David, what do we have today?
Quite a few topics to talk about today. We'll start by talking about what happened earlier, where Meta's servers malfunctioned, rendering all Quest headsets temporarily unusable. We'll then talk about the Steam hardware survey. Big Screen Beyond and Vario Aero now show up on it, so we can get an indication of their adoption and usage. We will talk about the International Space Station and how they've been using a VR headset, the Vive Focus 3, for some very interesting applications, and what the astronaut testing that thinks about it, what it might say about VR's essential use in the future of deep space exploration. We'll talk about the changes to Oculus accounts, where if you somehow still haven't migrated your legacy Oculus account, that will be deleted at the end of the month. We'll talk about Beat Saber's remaining two co-founders leaving. We'll talk about the big change to the Meta Quest Plus subscription service that makes it work a lot more like Games Pass than just the previous implementation. We'll talk about the report from a reliable supply chain analyst about the Apple Vision Pro's successor, when it might be produced, and what Apple might be focusing on. We'll talk about the report that Google tried to convince Meta to switch to its upcoming Android XR platform and what Meta's CTO said in response to that. We will finally, in our discussion, talk about the official confirmation of the partnership between Meta and LG that is rumored to be for Quest Pro 2. And we'll finish off, I will leave the studio and Ian will be interviewing a guest, a VR startup co-founder. I'm not going to tell you what that's about yet, but stay with us till the end of the show and you'll get that announcement from that interview.
Yeah, very big show. I'll probably leave it to you to jump right into it and tear through a lot of these new subjects as quickly as we can. If you're a new viewer, we try to build towards the bigger topics towards the end of the show. And thank you to our members who have been tuning in to us for a long time. I don't want to say I'm looking forward to that conversation, because it's going to be a tough one, but I think an important one to have on our channel and with our audience. Let's get into the news here, David.
Yeah, so we almost thought this was going to delay the show. Thankfully, it didn't. But essentially, something very strange happened to Meta's servers, and it logged everyone out of Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Quest, including on the headset. So between around 7:30 Pacific time and 8:40 Pacific time, for that just over an hour period, roughly, if you try to use your Quest, it would work for about 5 to 15 seconds, and then you'd be kicked back to this screen. This is what it would look like on Quest 3 with its color pass-through that just says something went wrong, a very ominous screen with no clear explanation. And so it appears that, yeah, Meta's servers sent some sort of a logout command to every single account and device. And so even when they fixed this, around an hour later at 8:40 a.m. PT, you had to log back into your Quest headset. So the biggest misconception around this I've seen on social media is the claim that Quests require an internet connection, or even the crazier claim that Quests require an always online internet connection. The really weird thing about this incident is that Quests do not require an internet connection. In fact, you can even use them on a network that doesn't allow connections to Meta servers. So something very weird has to have gone on here. The two possible explanations seem to be either the server thought that the login system was no longer secure and sent a logout command, or that some kind of client-side security check thought that the login was no longer correct. Anyway, it's clear what happened here. Everyone got logged out of their Quest.
Yeah, I made this joke over on Twitter. I actually got married last week. And the joke that I put on Twitter was that in the middle of my wedding day, the Meta Ray-Ban glasses overheated and could not store, transfer, or allow me to view my content on the Ray-Ban glasses. And then here I am back at work with you, David, And right as I'm trying to get ready for our show to do our work day with you guys to bring you the news, all Meta headsets everywhere got logged out, which is quite a thing to think of. Like, you know, those are momentary blips. You did a very good job in your article of pointing out that the last comparable situation to this, the Rift, when people went and tried to plug in the Rift or connect the Rift for the day, found that their security certificate had been expired and they could not actually use their Rift headsets that day. You pointed out that was actually quite an outage compared to, what, 90 minutes for this outage?
Yeah, that 2018 Rift incident where a security certificate expired was a 12-hour outage, just over 12 hours, actually, which is crazy to think about these days. But this was around 1 hour, this outage. And as Chris Richardson in our comments points out, funnily enough, this wasn't an issue if you were offline. If your Quest headset was not connected to a working Wi-Fi connection during this incident, you could continue to use it with no issue. That's, again, the really weird thing about this and how you can't just frame this as Meta servers went down or that Quests broke because there was no valid internet connection. That's the really funny thing. If you were offline, everything would continue working. What happened here is that either the server told all the headsets to log out, or the headset checked something with the server, didn't like what it saw back, thought there was a security issue, and logged itself out. A very weird one. But it does show that these devices are not designed robustly enough to work in situations like this where there is a server-side issue. You know, even if they do work offline, which I keep saying they do, they definitely should make sure that something like this doesn't happen again. Although this does seem to be a somewhat obscure issue, I imagine we will eventually see either a story from a reporter or someone at Meta will publicly post about what happened here. It's probably one of those issues that, you know, three things that should never have gone wrong all went wrong at the same time.
The two theories that I had in my head that I was thinking about was that there's some kind of a security incident that required them to log everyone out. The other thing that came up was they're also doing the migration over the Oculus accounts, right? That was a separate thing that came up. And so I'm curious if either of those, we'll find out, right? Hopefully they actually explain what happened here at some point during the day. You ready to move on, or are there any comments you want to refer to there first?
Yeah, I think we can move on to talk about the Steam Hardware Survey. For anyone that's not aware, every month Valve sends out to a random sample of Steam's user base an optional survey, which will automatically scan all of your PC components, as well as check your Steam VR logs for any VR headset used in the past month. If you accept, it uploads it to Valve, and then Valve compiles all the data together each month. And so this gives us a really interesting indication of the general adoption of PC VR, as well as which headsets are being used relative to one another. So I'll just pull up the data for this month. As you can see on the screen, the Quest 2 remains the number one option, as you would expect, with 39.18% relative usage. Valve Index is at second with 15.8%, and Quest 3 remains in third place at 14.5%. Now, Quest 3 had been seeing some really rapid growth since its launch back in October. Every month it was surging up, you know, going from fifth to fourth to third. And to be honest, I'd expected that it would get to second this month. But what seems to have really happened here is that its growth has significantly slowed down, and Index still remains slightly there for the third place. But the other interesting thing this month is that we see from the start, Big Screen Beyond and Vario Aero, two headsets which were previously just down here in the other section. Now, technically, they were actually added in January's data in a mid-month update. Valve sometimes comes along and updates this data after initial publication. They never leave any explanation for why, but they do it sometimes. So this is the first month we see it from the start. So you can see here, Big Screen Beyond is down here at 0.15%, and Vario Aero down here at 0.14%. So these headsets, while they offer, you know, dramatically higher resolution than most headsets, they're higher resolution than Quest 3, they're much, much higher resolution than Index, they still remain fairly niche. And I imagine that's due to the combination of their pricing and the fact that they still require SteamVR base stations in big screens situation. You know, there's a bit of friction in the ordering process there. You need to have an iPhone or iPad with the Face ID sensor and do a face scan and get this thing custom built for your face. So it's still interesting to see. And I wonder, as big screen scales up its production, how this will kind of surge up and up through the hardware survey. Because the founder of big screen, Darshan, has said that they are now cash flow positive for production. And they have also said that they are, you know, dramatically increasing their production rate every month. So it'll be very interesting to see how that adoption goes.
Yeah, Anti-Cleric in our comments pointing out that it's a really small market. And I do appreciate that. Another commenter I saw pointing out that they were surprised the HTC Vive is still on that list. And I don't think it's a surprise that it's still on the list. What's, I think, remarkable about that headset is its staying power, right? This was a headset that launched with the right package of room scale VR that was a great launch pad for an entire generation of games. And it got everyone up to 4% of the market. And here's Big Screen and Vario, two sort of independent efforts, trying to climb up the list here. This is a whole lot of headsets, with the exception of Index here and Quest 3, that are no longer sold. And we, of course, know how old Valve Index is. So this is just an interesting little statement of this is what indie small company can do. Ultimately, I hate using indie and small to describe a hardware effort. Like, that's a whole different level of complexity compared to spinning up a game. But this is what it looks like to try to do independent VR headset production in 2024.
Yeah, I really wonder how many of those original Vive owners upgraded to using the Index controllers, because that's obviously a possibility with the modularity of the Steam VR tracking system. As to the size of the market, yes, obviously this is talking about the relative percentage. So everything above the bottom line here is talking about out of 100% being all of the VR headset users on Steam. But let's talk a little bit about how big that market is in general. Because one thing we've started to do now in our articles with our graphs here is filter out Chinese users. And the reason we do that now is because in China, most VR headsets aren't available, most VR games aren't available. And so it doesn't really make sense to include the entire Steam hardware survey, because what you're often actually seeing in the old graph that show a stagnation of PC VR is the increase over time in Chinese users. And if you filter that out, you do see that there is a growth pattern here in the trend line for PC VR. It's still very slow. It's going from, you know, around 2.5% to almost 3% on the trend line, but it's there and it is growing. And just as a reminder for anyone who hasn't watched the show before, the reason we don't talk about data before March 2020 is that that's when Valve revised the methodology. It used to check for what headset was connected right now, the hardware survey, via USB. It now scans your Steam VR logs for the past month. So it's a much, much more reliable method and incomparable to beforehand.
So one thing David and I were talking about was whether we could control for Linux or whether we could control for Steam Deck. I think it's very interesting you're trying to control for the Chinese VR market to understand how much the Steam numbers are changing based on that, because what we're trying to zero in on is how quickly is VR growing relative to the overall Steam market. And Steam has released a handheld system that we ultimately don't know how well it's selling relative to the adoption of VR. So trying to control for Linux usage relative to VR headset is actually a little bit of insight.
Yeah, well, what I said to you at the time, and what I'll say again, is that the number of Linux users on Steam is actually tiny. And remember that, yes, Steam Deck uses Linux, but when we talk about controlling for Chinese users, something like 30% of Steam is using Chinese language now, right? Either traditional Chinese or simplified Chinese. 1.46% or something like that, something like 1.8% are using Linux. So The thing that I would like to point out here is that what we can say from this data is that more people are using VR than Steam Deck by far. VR is, if you look at how much Linux usage on Steam increased from before and after Steam Deck, you can kind of figure out what percentage of Steam users are using a Steam Deck, and it's about 1%. Meanwhile, VR is, you know, at above 2%. So VR is something like twice as popular as Steam Deck, if not more, about 2.5 times. So, you know, you have this narrative sometimes in gaming media that PC VR is this tiny thing, and then simultaneously that a bunch of people are using Steam Decks. It's actually the opposite. More people are using VR than Steam Decks by far.
Well, so what's interesting there is, Blair, anti-cleric in our comments, pushing back or trying to understand what is the size of this market? What is the available opportunity to a developer building for this? And it's not great, right? Like, there's a lot of usability issues in just getting a wired headset connected to your PC that makes it an open question about whether you can make any money just on Steam alone. I don't think anyone is really saying that you can, like, that it's any easier or that it's going to work. What we are looking for in these numbers, to me, are indications of what Valve might do next. They have spent a decade of investment on Steam VR in order to open up the Steam market for a larger segment of players who want to access via a VR headset. And now they're just barely into this journey, a couple of years now, of Steam Deck, and they're already at 1% of Steam users. You chart that out over a couple more years of investment, perhaps doing a lower cost Steam Deck in a couple more years, you can maybe see them reaching a couple percentage points of the Steam market being via Steam Deck in just a couple years of investment versus 10 years of investment for the VR route. All this is, you know, figuring into when are they going to get to their next VR headset, right? But it's competing in my mind against the gains that can be gained as far as what driving the price of Steam Deck down and putting that handheld device in a lot more hands in a lot of other countries.
I mean, the base model Steam Deck is no longer very expensive. When they introduced the OLED, they cut the base model. It's something like $350. It's not more expensive than a VR headset. It's just that more people choose to use it. Crispy in our comments is pointing out that according to the latest data, there are 132 million monthly active users on Steam. And that means that there are somewhere around 3 million active VR users on Steam. It's not that there's no one using PC VR. I think the problem for a lot of developers is that a lot of people who use PC VR aren't buying PC VR games. A huge number of these people are playing VR chat, or they're playing simulators that are, you know, for the likes of DCS, Flight Simulator, Elite Dangerous, or racing sims like iRacing, Assetto Corsa, Dirt Rally. They're not the same kind of people who are going to come out and buy your made-for-VR game. That's why most developers tell us that they see the vast majority of their success on Quest. And the majority of VR titles release on Quest and PC, and if they can, and it's suitable for that studio, PlayStation VR 2 as well. Very rarely do we see a kind of PC VR-only title these days, other than kind of Vertigo 2, and even it came to PlayStation VR 2 eventually. And the developer there, I think, made quite clear that their reasoning for not launching on Quest was not an economic one. It was their personal preference to not support Meta's platform. So it is true to say, yes, that if you are wanting to build a VR game and make real money, targeting only PC doesn't make much sense. But targeting also PC as well as Quest, if you have the development resources, does make sense for a lot of developers, and that's why they do it.
Yeah, well, we will have to figure out the base number there that put in the question is the millions, how many millions of Steam VR users there are. That's a number that Valve doesn't typically release very often. It's pieced together from guesses often. Yeah,
sorry, they do release the number of monthly Steam users. So if you have the percentage of Steam users using a VR headset and you have the percentage of monthly Steam users, you get to around 3 million Steam VR users. So we do know how many there are. It's just The what we don't know is how many of those people are just playing VR challenge simulators and will never buy a VR game from a typical developer.
You're absolutely right. The usage patterns, the purchase patterns are completely different, right? And we are seeing this transition over on the Meta ecosystem with a story we'll get to very soon to ready for the different usage patterns in standalone VR. Any comments you want to respond to before we move on?
Yeah, I see Anti-Cleric Blair in our comments saying, I don't believe that. Someone's numbers are wrong. Well, these are all Valve's numbers. So if you'd like to tell Valve that they're, which number do you think is wrong? Do you think they're lying about their monthly active Steam users? Or do you think they're lying about their percentage of Steam users using a VR headset? The reality is that VR is bigger than a lot of people think it is. You know, there's still this idea that we're still in the 2018 days or 2017 days or even the 2014 days where this was a niche hobby. This is no longer a niche hobby. VR is now a real consumer market. Millions of people actively use VR every month.
But the usage patterns, the purchase patterns, the upgrade patterns, you know, what you're pointing out, Blair, is right. Like, they're not, these are, when we're talking about PC, these are people who upgrade their graphics card once every several years, usually when a big new push, you know, there's a game they want to play to buy the graphics card for. And we don't have those games coming out by any pace. And we all know that, right? Vertigo 2 would be the one thing that people would be like, oh, I want to play this game that seems so inspired by the games I love, because, you know, Valve isn't releasing any new PC VR games. I think we should probably try to move on here as soon as we can. Any comments you want to get into?
No, I think we can move to the next topic. I think we've covered this. Maybe the last thing I would show is just a little graph we came up, a supplemental one in our article, showing the tracking systems on Steam VR. Usually we show the percentage of each company. So we have Meta and Valve and HTC, but that didn't really change meaningfully this month at all. It would have basically just been a copy paste of last month. So I thought we'd show this in a slightly different way, where you can now see the number of headsets that use inside-out tracking, the number that use base stations, and then here the number that use external camera sensors. So that's the Rift and the PlayStation VR when used through third-party drivers. So it's just an interesting little tidbit, but we can move on to talk about that astronaut International Space Station story now.
Yeah, I'm excited about this one because we have seen VR headsets go to the International Space Station before. We've seen them used in various ways over the years. Of course, training is a core use case for VR just in general, and NASA has been a research ground for VR headsets going back decades because they allowed you to simulate conditions in outer space on the ground. Well, this is really interesting because it's indicating that VR has some stickiness beyond just those research use cases. Why don't you get into it, David?
Yeah, so this headset, this Vive Focus 3 from HTC, went up back in November, and its first role was for mental health. So they just had the astronauts put it on occasionally and play some 360-degree videos of scenic environments on Earth, with the idea being that it would kind of take them out of their detached environment and, you know, this very kind of clinical, constrained place they're in, and give them a wee bit of relaxation. And very recently, HTC has opened part two of this experiment, which is to use it for exercise as well. So you can see the exercise bike here in this footage or in this picture. And the headset is synced up with the bike on Bluetooth. And so what the astronaut sees is a first person 270-degree video recorded by a cyclist traveling along a path on Earth. It plays back at the rate that the astronaut is cycling on the smart exercise bike so that they feel like they are cycling through it. And more than that, the video has a metadata track with the difficulty of cycling. So as the cyclist in the video goes up a hill, the difficulty on the smart exercise bike increases, the resistance increases, and it also increases when they go on a different surface. So this lets them exercise and feel like they're on Earth. Now, you have to remember that in microgravity, the bone and muscle loss is such that astronauts need to exercise for a minimum of 2 hours every day. So this can become quite a chore for them. And imagine if you're doing this and you're staring at this wall of kind of machinery and, you know, panels. It's not going to be the best view of all. So let me read you what this astronaut who has been conducting this trial said about the VR headset that he now has on the space station. Here is his quote. "We astronauts on board the space station are living in a very confined, artificial, laboratory-like environment. It's very sterile, it's very cold, and we don't have access to nature, and that affects our psychological well-being. I have to be honest, I didn't actually expect it would make much of a difference, but I find that I love wearing the headset. It takes me into nature. It makes me feel like I'm out in nature, that I'm outside of the space station, away from this artificial environment, and it really de-stresses me. It makes me relax. It takes away a lot of the daily stress and just allows me to re-energize, to catch my breath, to feel like I'm back on the Earth. It's a really great way to get away from this artificial environment. One of my favorite things to do on board the space station is to cycle while wearing the virtual reality headset."
I think we need Stevie the TV to put air quotes around the screen or something when we enter quote mode, because you were in quote mode. I love that. And it is a deeply impactful quote. We've of course heard of the overview effect brought up many times over the years. This is almost the inverse of that in my head, which is pretty powerful and just as important for the individuals actually going through deep space travel. I want to move on. So is there any response, any comments you want to get into before we do that?
The last thing I want to say about this is just that I think this is going to be essential in the future of deep space exploration. I think the Artemis program that NASA is currently conducting aims to construct a lunar base in the early 2030s. A lot of people don't seem to know that, but yes, NASA is going to build a moon base in the early 2030s. And that's obviously supposed to be a first step to eventually having a base on Mars. And if astronauts are on these long duration missions where they are far from Earth for months, and when they're traveling in that time, you know, days for the moon and months for Mars, they're in this incredibly constrained environment, VR is the perfect way to give them the ability to relax and exercise and watch content while they're in those conditions. You can imagine the Vision Pro style use case here, where every astronaut on a mission to Mars has a, you know, immersive content, a library of traditional content, of immersive content. They have all their favorite movies in 3D ready to watch at any time in their own personal theater. And then they step onto their exercise machine and they have some sort of integration there. VR seems like a perfect match for deep space exploration.
Yeah, there is that NASA engineer that I talked to a long time ago who made the comment that the television isn't the right medium for us to go to Mars with the astronauts. VR is actually the right medium for that. And that engineer works at Apple now. And among the things that you get just out of the box on a Apple Vision Pro is sort of a 3D rendered environment that you can move around, including the moon. So we're on the path there, and it's really interesting to think of the closed loop here of usefulness, right? If the astronaut can use it to escape the loneliness of space, maybe they can also use it to work, or maybe they could use it to analyze the camera information that's coming off of immediately outside of their spaceship. So they could, you know, land on Mars, put on the headset, and actually see outside of their own walls of their spaceship directly on Mars using the outside sensors. And that same information that lets them see the outside landscape without actually going out into it could beam back to Earth a near live view of the environment of Mars. And we can all walk around at home the Mars landscape. I think we are approaching in the next 5 years big deals from companies having to partner either with private companies or with NASA itself to put some of these capture systems in place for exactly the types of systems you're discussing in the 2030s.
Yeah, it's a great point, and that interesting duality some of our commenters are pointing out as well, this idea that they're in space wanting to be back on Earth and we're on Earth wanting to be in space, and VR can help bridge those gaps. Let's talk about that Oculus account story. This is a much smaller story than it sounds. If you're not familiar with this, it's that Meta announced that legacy Oculus accounts that haven't been migrated to Meta accounts will be deleted at the end of the month. So it's important to note that Oculus accounts were gotten rid of just before Quest 2 launched, or at least the ability to set up a new headset as a new user with Oculus accounts. So anyone that, you know, jumped in on Quest 2 or Quest Pro or Quest 3, this does not affect you at all. Anyone who ever linked their Facebook account, this doesn't affect you. Anyone who set up a Meta account, which is now, you know, almost 2 years ago that they introduced the Meta accounts to replace the Facebook requirement, this doesn't affect you. This is a very small number of people who probably haven't used their headsets in many years, and they still have, you know, an Oculus account from back in the day with purchases and apps, and they never converted it to a Meta account. If they don't by the end of the month, they lose everything: their purchases, their apps, their friends, all their account data. Luckily for them, fixing this is a one click thing. Well, it's one click to a URL and then like three clicks. So we have a link in our article to do that. Meta says that they have emailed anyone who is affected by this. So anyone who's affected by this will have got a warning: your account will be deleted if you don't click this link. I saw someone on X ask the question, why can't they automatically do this? And I've just seen, just as I said that, Guy Godin, the developer of Virtual Desktop, in our comments asking why didn't they convert them automatically? It's a very interesting question. I suspect there's some sort of legal reason, because there may be a different terms of service between the previous and the new, and you technically didn't sign up for this, you signed up for this. They can't do that. But yeah. So this is a very small issue for a very small number of people, but it's still notable because this is when, I guess, the last remnants of the word Oculus get deleted off the Meta servers.
Yeah, I think when I think about this, I know we'll never get the number. I know it's like absurd to even think about it, but I always wonder, you know, how many dollars of content got thrown out with the switchover, right? Like that's quite literally what's going to happen is just a bunch of things that people paid for. The entitlements for those things are just going to go poof into the air. And it happens periodically in very quiet ways on all of our digital platforms. They just, you know, somebody removes it from sale and the entitlement disappears from your library and maybe you don't even notice it. It's a really, really crummy aspect of the changeover in technology from physical media to digital media, and we'll keep on it. It's like you said, it's a minor issue here in the grand scheme of things, because they have done a porting work years ago to get people over.
Yeah, I mean, the real story here is just what a complete strategic mess there's been over accounts in the past 4 years. I guess this is that finally coming to an end. You know, they had these Oculus accounts, and then just before Quest 2 launched, they go, we're getting rid of Oculus accounts, replacing them with your Facebook social media profile. It's almost a forgotten nightmare now that happened, that Quest 2 launched requiring you to link your Facebook social media account. You had to have it, and not just an existing one, it had to actually be active. So if you got banned from Facebook, you would no longer be able to use your headset. And that was a huge complaint. It was probably the number one complaint about Quest 2. The number one complaint about Quest 2 was not anything to do with the hardware or core technology. It was, why on earth do I need a Facebook social media account? So back in August 2022, a few months before Quest Pro launched, Meta realized, well, they probably realized a lot earlier, but Meta announced that they had realized how stupid this was, and they got rid of the Facebook requirement and replaced it with a Meta account, which is basically the same thing as an Oculus account. You know, these are like, they both require a username and a password with an email address. Like, it seems that they've spent all that time and infrastructure effort going to Facebook accounts, then they had to kind of undo it. And yeah, I wonder how much development time and effort on their platform was wasted on that, and what other things they could have done with the engineering time.
Yeah, it's head scratcher here. It's been a head scratcher for years. I actually think it's really interesting to put this in larger context of what value does Meta get from this fresh start to its Meta account system versus actually Apple having so much, you know, people so invested in the content that is connected to their Apple ecosystem. Google has the same thing to a certain extent, with a lot of people having their purchases tied up in Google Play. That's actually both a hindrance to Meta when we talk about them wanting to get people to build up their libraries, but it's actually a major benefit as well, because it means that they can differentiate themselves and just have content that's specific to VR in attached to those Meta accounts. Any comments you want to get into here?
Just Lano said that they made a Facebook account just to use the Quest, and they never used it for any other reason. Aaron Davis pointing out that Facebook's name was in the garbage at the time and people didn't want anything to do with them. So it was just such a bad move back then. And we have other commenters just pointing out again what a waste of time that was. I would say, when you talk about Google, I've been through this kind of situation as a Google user plenty of times. I think the most recent one was when they shut down their Spotify competitor, Google Play Music. You had to convert your account over to YouTube Music. There are probably like 5 or 6 examples of Google having weird account conversions required back in the day. I think they tried to merge YouTube with Google Plus, their Facebook competitor, and had to unmerge that. It was a whole shebang. Joshua Ryder saying, Google's releasing their own OS for spatial computing called Android XR, right? Yes, and that is one of our topics today. We are currently on topic 4, about to go to topic 5, and that is topic number 8. So we will get to that later in the show if you're ready to go to topic number 5.
Yeah, I think we're ready to talk about the Beat Saber news here pretty quickly here. What happens for those of you who aren't aware, companies get acquired by bigger companies, and what typically happens is the people who are founders, people who own pieces of the company, get promised a lot of stock at their new owner over time. So what you typically see happen is these founders who have ownership stake in a company come over to the new company, and they last about 3 to 5 years before they get all of their stock grants from the company and then leave, because the golden handcuffs are unlocked and they're ready to walk away. Why am I explaining that, David Heaney?
Yeah, because the last 2 of 3 Beat Saber co-founders have left Beat Games. Beat Saber was obviously acquired by Meta a few years ago. You won't find it on Pico. You won't find it on Apple Vision. Interestingly, you do find it on PlayStation VR, though, PlayStation VR 2. I suspect that's just because it was already on PlayStation VR 1. But yes, kill me if I pronounce these names wrong, and I probably will, but Jan Ilavsky and Vladimir, unfortunately, my notes are not actually rendering one of those characters correctly, so I'm not going to be able to read it at all. Essentially, the two remaining co-founders have left. Jaroslav Beck left last year in May, so the 3 co-founders of Beat Saber are no longer at Beat Games, but it does look like Beat Saber is continuing on their same vision. They didn't say anything disparaging when they left. The noteworthy comparison I would make here is another of Meta Studios had their founder leave last year, Dante from Onward, Downpour Interactive, that makes Onward. And it does seem to be a trend here with the founders of acquired companies leaving. It happened with, you know, the founder of Instagram, the founder of WhatsApp. As Meta, then Facebook, more tightly integrated it and brought it under their vision, the founders eventually leave. But, you know, they've been at this for many years now, the Beat Saber co-founders, so it may just be they wanted to do something else with their lives at this point.
Yeah, so this comment from Jadrenko, I heard Google has this exciting idea of launching a VR cloud gaming platform called Spatia in 2025 and then shutting it down in 2027. I appreciate the joke. It's a good one, and it's related to subjects we will get into later in this discussion. I think that's a good summary of what's happening with Beat Saber there, right? Beat Games was an early company to sell in the build-up towards spatial computing, building up Meta's library of content developers. I'm going to be surprised if Meta, if any of the development studios built, like, I would expect most of the stuff to come out of Meta Studios to end up on Horizon sooner or later. I don't see these devs releasing new games for the Quest Store. I do wonder whether something like Beat Saber has a home in place like Horizon, even though I know nobody wants to play it on a mobile phone.
It's a very interesting point. You do have to wonder whether that will happen. I guess the thing right now is I'm surprised that Beat Saber already isn't free to play. It's still $30. It seems to me that the money there could easily be made in the DLCs, that, you know, the Daft Punk DLC they just announced is coming soon. They have so many other tracks and albums from suitable artists. I think we'd have to get the first step would be it go free to play. I just feel like Horizon's still quite a few years off being able to pull off something like this. Beat Saber is still always in the top three most played apps. Yeah. What would be the reason for Meta to do it right now, other than just to push Horizon?
Well, you're right about the free-to-play needing to be the first shift, and I would not be surprised to see that happen. Right, we've heard jokes. Where is Beat Saber 2? Why? Just make Beat Saber a forever game is the obvious solution. The model I've talked about, I think theorized about a little bit on the show, but I'll just repeat it. I think a lot about the subway system here in New York and the idea of five people getting into a subway car and the world outside the subway car loading for them on their path somewhere. And if you think of Beat Saber being $30 or whatever it costs up front, that actually makes it at the far end of the subway line. Because you have to have everyone in the subway car pay for their ticket. You have to have everyone get loading it, get it loaded and downloaded for them to play the songs. And then when this game is loaded for everyone, the subway car doors could open and you all step out into Beat Saber together to play a Beat Saber game. That's one of the things I've imagined in my head of like how this might actually function. The reason I've thought about that is, David, Horizon Worlds is up there as equivalent to this game content you have to spend tens of dollars for in order to enjoy. And it just makes sense that like all of those Horizon Worlds are the first things you see inside VR. And then stuff like Beat Saber is the very next tier, the beginning of free to play stuff that is just really, really well made for the platform. And then beyond that, beyond the free-to-play stuff, you have the really deep dive things. You have the things like Red Matter 2 that are maybe single player. You don't need to actually go, you don't go with anyone to that. You just buy it and then go offline to have those people join you on a Discord call if you go play that. Maybe you could share your view from inside that world. That's the only way someone can join you inside a place like Red Matter. But this is the I really do think we're in for a transition of this magnitude in the next year from Meta in order to promote their Horizon Worlds content. And all this stuff from the first party, from the studios they've acquired, we don't know where it lands. And that is an ongoing question for us.
I don't disagree. Eventually, if they are serious about Horizon and they really do want it to be this everything platform, they do need to deliver experiences like this. You should be able to play the equivalent of Walkabout Mini Golf, the equivalent of Beat Saber, all of these core, mechanically simplistic apps. I just disagree on the timeline. The next year is far, far too early. They need to increase the core technology there. And I guess right now they still have this for $30 because people will still pay $30. It's always in the top sellers. It's always in the top played. Yeah. A lot of people buy a VR headset with one of the first things in their head is, oh, I'm going to play Beat Saber on this. It is still to this day a system seller.
Well, all right. So I like Blair's comment here. The reason is that it's because the only thing VR is making money on is the only reason they won't do the free to play. And I love that. And my pushback on that comment, because it is absolutely true, right? Like, so that's a fantastically biting comment.
I don't think it's true. It's not absolutely true.
They're making money on the hardware, but it's loss leading.
The apologies there, we accidentally knocked out for a second. But no, I don't mean it's not true because they're making money on the hardware. I mean, they make money on plenty of games. Look in the top sellers. Beat Saber is only one of them. There's a bunch of them that are owned by Meta. They take a 30% cut of every game on the store. Every single game you buy, they take a 30% cut.
fine. I'll take Blair's comment in the spirit it was given, which is just humorously. The point that like you put this one game where they sell a very large percentage of their DLCs to a very large percentage of the buyers. Stack the size of that market against the size that of the iTunes store that Apple launched two decades ago for music, movies, television shows, and eventually they added games and apps to the App Store. But you have this giant billions and billions and billions of dollars market that people are invested in, but Apple is also invested in. It's my point is, if Meta went and turned this free to play, the benefit of getting more people in to this free to play beat slicing experience with a bunch of songs that you just get for free, it's bigger than the money you get out of the DLCs. And it's actually a strength when you consider like Apple can't really like Apple wants to push you. You've pointed this out again and again on the show, how Apple has just chosen not to make it easy to switch users on most of their iOS devices. I'm saying that's a symptom of the very same thing here, where Apple actually is encouraged to make money from selling you a movie, a video, multiple times to multiple people. There's actually a platform here that Meta could use as the basis of like letting you get into something with five other people for free without spending a single dime up front.
And where do they make the money on not spending a single dime?
I'm not going to defend Sorrento, okay? I'm not going to bring Nolan Sorrento's business model in here and defend it, okay? All right, are we ready to move on?
Yeah, I guess the last thing I'd say, though, is I think like this is, in many ways, the business model. The business model is the 30% cut. Meta makes a lot of money, or makes the vast, vast majority of its money on ads today, and so does Google. But both of them want to diversify. They want to make revenue money. They want to make that same money that Apple makes. The reason that Apple has been fighting tooth and nail against sideloading and alternative app stores until they were forced to by the EU's recent regulations, the reason that Apple is so interested in ecosystem lock-in is that they want that 30% cut. All of these companies want to be the toll operator. That's how they want to make this money. There are obviously people who don't want to spend any money, and to them, you add services, right? You use ads to make money off them. You provide a basic experience, but there's a huge market as well of people who do actually want to give you their money. I think Beat Saber, for now, at the very least for the songs, it would make no sense to sell those for free. Selling them is the money. That's the whole business model of something like Beat Saber.
Fair. You're not wrong there. Let's move on to the next subject here, because it is related. The thing I just want to bring up there is the amount you trust your company, the platform that you're spending money on, relates to how much money you're going to spend on it, right? Like, devs are looking at Google going, how the hell am I going to build a VR game for you after what you've done with Stadia and your previous Daydream effort? That also is a similar mindset for people that are actually buying the content at home. And Meta is the beginning of this journey of value creation inside their platform. And I think this next story is directly related to that.
Yeah, and stay tuned for our discussion on those Google issues and relating that back to things like Stadia later on when we talk about Google's Android XR. But our next topic is the Meta Quest Plus subscription. So they have altered how this works. How it used to work is that you pay the $8 a month, and you each month were able to redeem two VR games. So there'd be two VR games for each month. And as long as you were subscribed during that month, you can redeem them into your library. But you only have access to them as long as you stay subscribed. What they've changed now from this month, March, is that in addition to that system, where each month there are two games you can redeem into your Quest Plus library, they have a base library of games catalog, quite similar to something like PlayStation Plus Extra or Xbox Game Pass. And for now, there are around 25 titles. I think Ian has just lost connection, so I'll just read out what those titles are. So Anyone who is subscribed to Quest Plus has access to these titles as long as they stay subscribed. It's not a per month thing. There's the monthly two titles and then that you redeem and keep while you're subscribed. And then there's this games catalog that's new that you can access as long as you stay subscribed. So there is currently in the games catalog, A Township Tale, Demio, Espire 1 VR Operative, Fruit Ninja, Hand Physics Lab, Jurassic World, Moss, Onward, Red Matter, Sports Scramble, The Climb, Until You Fall, and Walkabout Mini Golf. So that's a great collection of games, to be honest. And this really completely changes the value proposition for the MetaQuest Plus subscription, in my opinion. This is now at the point where beforehand I would say, you know, if you're interested in those specific games on that specific month and you want to play them, but not forever, you know, that's a very, very small subset of people when you get to the amount of clauses I just added there. But with this new Quest Plus subscription, I would say that this is a must buy for a new Quest buyer. If you're a new Quest buyer, for $8 a month or something like, I think it's $60 for the yearly subscription, you get like a good number of some of the best games on Quest. Nicholas Johansson in our comments is pointing out that Meta has said that they will roll in and out games from that catalog. That's very important to note. So at any time, they may take one of these titles out. They may put another one in. And that is obviously how the cookie crumbles when it comes to these subscription services. I know some people are just ideologically against the idea of a subscription. And, you know, they think if I don't own this, I don't want it. I don't want to just kind of rent access to these games. And I get that. If that's what you, how you feel, sure. But like from a pure value proposition, some of these games are like $20, $30. You buy a couple of these games and you're already at the subscription price for an entire year for this. So I think like unless you're someone who wants to be able to play all of these games in like 2027, for most people in a sort of short-term sense, this is a very good value deal.
I see Jagger Games in our comments. That is, I believe it's David Jagno. I don't know her. But thanks for joining us and glad for you to tune in today. I think about Walkabout Mini Golf being in this and the DLC content that is driving users. If that game got removed from this library, I would immediately be driven to want to go purchase it and go get the DLCs in order to experience it again after it got removed. I would hope that Meta would warn me before a game like that actually removed from the library that has so much great DLC stuff. But I would hope your point about the ideologically opposed makes a lot of sense. I think the ideological opposition probably stems from the idea that you can take this beautiful world away from me at any given time. Right, it's exactly what I was talking about before, and plenty of people want to ensure that never ever happens. Well, when we're talking about online service games and some of these things having online services, these devs can't chart out whether they can make money 10 years from now for an online service game. And there's just no model out there for like ensuring that the servers will never go offline. And I wonder about that as we approach this new era, right? When we see big MMOs or big services go offline that had a big launch, it's a huge bummer to invest $30 or $50 or $70 in a game. And then a year later, the devs are just like, oh, the servers are too much to keep online.
Yeah, I think VR doesn't really support those kind of games very well yet with the active specific user base. But a lot of these games are games that you can kind of play offline or play with one or two friends. Onward, which is added to this, got a mercenary mode recently, and I tried it out. It's great. I still, regardless of the fact that all of the other shooters have, you know, much more content and much more kind of gameplay focus, I still think nothing beats Onward on Quest standalone for gunplay. On PC, you have things like Hot Dogs, Horseshoes, and Hand Grenades that obviously is in a different league. But when it comes to Quest standalone, the gunplay, the actual feeling of am I holding a real weapon, something about the way Onward does things just feels better. That's a slight tangent there. But you know, like we have a a commenter here. It's David Jagger Games, David Jagno, saying that he thinks for the $8 a month price point, this is a no-brainer. And I agree with that. Like, to have access to all these games, even if you pitched it as you're only getting this for 1 month, right? For 1 month, you can play all of these games for $8. It's still a good deal. It's only $8. Yeah. Some of these games are $30.
And Blair's comment replying back to me, thinking that you'll be able to play these games on a Meta headset in 7 years is a long shot. That's absolutely accurate. And I think that goes to the ideological thing where people just... they just want the safety of knowing, like an old disc that you got from your game, that, you know, if I could plug that thing into the system 15 years from now, it would still work hypothetically. But we don't get that guarantee in VR, and it's still very, very frustrating. Yes, I was joking. That is David Jagno. Thank you for tuning in today. And thank you for the active discussion. We're moving to the middle of the show here. We're behind schedule of where we wanted to be, I think. For a discussion with our guest here in a little while. So just bear with us, guest, and wait to join just a little bit longer. I'll prompt you when it's time for you to join and for us to get into that discussion. You ready to get into the next one here, David?
Yeah, the last thing I'd just say is that the monthly games for this month, so the ones that... this is so confusing to even say. I hate how confusing these things are to communicate. The games that if you redeem them this month, you keep as long as you stay subscribed, include Contractors. So, you know, if you sign up to Quest Plus right now, you get Onward and Contractors, which, yeah, to me, it seems like this really is a game changer for the kind of person that buys a Quest headset and looks at all the game prices and goes, whoa, these are really expensive. I bought this headset for a budget reason. I can't afford this. That's the kind of person this is for. But yes, let's talk about that report from the supply chain analyst about the successor to Apple Vision Pro. Obviously, when we're writing these articles, we don't know what Apple is going to call it. So we avoid using the term Vision Pro 2. But for simplicity in this conversation, so I'm not repeatedly saying the successor to Apple Vision Pro, I'm going to just say Vision Pro 2 for simplicity's sake. But keep in mind, we do not know what it's going to be called. There's a few interesting notes from this report from the supply chain analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, who has been very reliable about Apple products over the past 10 years, roughly an 80% reliability rate, depending on how you measure it. When it comes to Vision Pro, they were reporting a lot of the details years in advance. So Kuo says that he expects Apple to ship a total of around 250,000 units overall this year. And he predicts that Vision Pro will launch in other countries before June. So in the next few months, Vision Pro could be arriving outside the US. There's a lot of people who are eagerly awaiting that. There are some people who did what we did and flew over to the US to get one. There are other people who tried to import it. And I've heard from some people who had some really difficult issues around regulations and import laws importing it. So that's interesting. So for comparison to that 250,000 scale, in October, Kuo, the same person, claimed that Meta would produce 2.5 million Quest 3 headsets by the end of 2023. So if you think Quest 3's launch was pretty much 10 times the scale of Apple Vision Pro's first year, it shows you where Apple is in its development cycle. And that's directly relevant to what else Kuo has to say. So before I talk about what they said about Vision Pro 2, there have been some mainstream media reports that I would describe as sensationalism, talking about, you know, Apple's early adopters are already returning their Vision Pros. Oh, no, to write an article like that, a journalist needs to get like, what, three or four people who are returning their Vision Pros. And Kuo says that based on their supply chain contacts, because if you return something, the company has to inspect it and refurbish it. Based on their supply chain contacts, they estimate that the Vision Pro return rate is less than 1%, which is well in line with Apple's other products. I also saw an interesting quote from one of the stories about the Vision Pro returns from a Apple Store employee who said it's just the effing YouTubers at the moment.
Yeah, no, I love that. So, yeah, it's. I think it's an accurate quote. I think it's a, and your point of like, you find three or four people. Your point, David, there, we need to just, I want to drill down into and put a spotlight on it, because you can find three or four YouTubers claiming to return their Apple Vision Pro. You can't find quite as many people who are legitimately using it for development purposes. Now, you go find developers who are returning it. You'll find nuanced comments about why they're returning it, right? You won't find necessarily this thing is bullshit awful. Like, that you'll find nuanced commentary on this doesn't serve my needs as a developer, right? Like, it's not this picture that has been portrayed by, like you said, YouTubers that are returning it after this clout chase situation.
Yeah, I think there were some legitimate returns for comfort, for example. I did hear from one person that said they really wanted to love it and they loved the experience, but no matter how they adjusted either of the straps, and even when they went into the Apple store and worked with some of the specialists, it just was too heavy for their head, and that's completely understandable. So, I just mentioned that Quo's estimate for this year is 250,000 units, and that's obviously a lot smaller scale than Quest. So Apple's next moves, according to Quo, is going to be trying to scale this business up, because they don't want to be selling only 250,000 of these things a year. They want something that's a lot more mass producible and something that can be sold, therefore, for a lower price. And so Quo says that Apple's main focus for Vision Pro 2 will be improving the efficiency of production and supply chain to reduce cost and increase production scale. And if you've watched this show before, you'll have heard me crow on about the OLED microdisplay supply difficulties, the fact that this is at this density, this is a brand new supply chain, this is a brand new kind of display, a 4K OLED microdisplay. The production capacity for this has only just started this year at any real scale. Sony is currently the supplier for Apple. We've heard in the past and talked about on this show that Apple is talking to other companies, BOE and SIA. These are Chinese and Taiwanese companies that are building up their own 4K OLED microdisplay plants. That is going to be the story of high-end headsets over the next half of this decade, the remaining half of this decade. The production is going to go from the estimate we talked about on an earlier episode, where Apple is apparently paying $300 per display, so $700 for just the displays alone in this thing, to eventually the ideal that we get to is that these things are being churned out just like regular smartphone OLEDs for, a tenth of that price. And so Apple is obviously going to be trying to get more OLED microdisplay producers in. They're going to be trying to simplify some of the manufacturing here. They want to get this thing to be to cost less and to be able to be produced more. Because the average person, when they look at Vision Pro, obviously their first complaint is that's ridiculous, it's $3,500. But that's not any kind of crazy insight. Apple knows that the price is ridiculous. If you look at how this product is positioned, it's well positioned to eventually overtake the iPad one day, to replace the iPad, but it's priced like 10 times what the iPad's priced at, the base iPad at the very least. So there's going to be a long path to get there. But what seems clear from this report is that instead of making any dramatic new features added or, any crazy new technology, they just want to make this a lot more mass producible. The other thing that that Mark Gurman from Bloomberg said in the past is that Apple's top priorities around design is to make it smaller and lighter. So I imagine what we'll see in Vision Pro 2 is a smaller, lighter, more mass producible product at a lower price. Maybe it's just down to $3,000. Maybe it's $2,500. Whatever it ends up being, it's going to be at a larger scale. And the final thing is that Quo says that according to his supply chain contacts, Foxconn will produce the Vision Pro 2. So there's currently a much lower scale, newer Chinese startup producing the original Vision Pro. Luxshare is their name. But Foxconn is obviously the company that makes the iPhones and the iPads and the MacBooks, and they're very good at producing things at scale. So we'll probably see a design that Foxconn can do. And this will apparently happen in late 2025 or early 2026. So reading between the lines, we will probably see Vision Pro 2 launch on the two-year anniversary of Vision Pro 1. And just the final thing to say is that there have been many reports of Apple working on a cheaper non-Pro Vision, but according to Quo's report, that still has not advanced to the stage of talking with suppliers or assemblers. So that's probably further out than people think. It looks like what we're going to get next in 2 years is a Vision Pro 2 before we get a Vision Air.
Oh, the names here are really tricky, right? To think about how they apply names to the Vision lines, right? I would expect just a Vision device to be the mainstream, do everything computer for everyone. That's priced a little bit more affordably. And the thing that I wonder about, right? We've got a picture here of perhaps some of the things that Meta is choosing to rip out of a cheaper Quest 3 Lite that we believe to be imminent. We don't know what Apple would choose to remove, and you've spent so much time talking about these displays. The appearance of true black in darkness in VR, as well as in movie theaters, is phenomenal. It's absolutely super important. And Apple has had this history of needing to dual source products in order to not get tied up by a single supplier that can raise the price of their end product for them, right? So if you source from multiple outlets, you can say, oh, well, this guy is giving me this price, you should give me that price too. And then you've got two people supplying you, and if one screws up, the other one you can increase your order for, and they can take the manufacturing work for you. All this is to say is I don't want to be seeing a cheaper Vision device that doesn't have the true black displays. It seems so important.
Every report I've seen suggests that Apple considers OLED micro displays the minimum bar. I think there are no way they're going to go for LCD at any point in the future. And I think that's why they're having so much trouble in terms of getting this product to scale. I think that is the difficulty here. Apple is saying, you know, we want this as the minimum bar, but the production supply chain for this just does not exist at the scale they want to be at yet. When Apple first introduced Vision Pro and Tim Cook went on, I believe the show is called Good Morning America. I've never watched it, but I watched Tim Cook's segment on it, of course. He said something along the lines of, you're going to live in the future and you're going to live it today. I maintain that this is still incredibly early in Apple's journey for AR and VR. The Vision headset line is going to sprawl out well into the 2030s, and we're only just seeing the very, very start of it. And, you know, I don't think they're going to strip anything out of Vision Pro 2. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're just going to find, you know, lighter components, lighter materials, better design choices, and, you know, as you say, multiple suppliers. They're going to have, instead of just Sony, they're going to have some Chinese company doing it, and some Taiwanese company, and maybe some Japanese company as well. We already have seen that in plenty of iPhones where they dual source displays, and in the far past, they even dual sourced other components as well.
We've got two more big subjects to get into before our guest joins. I want to request to our audience here that you take the link and share it on your social media. Get more people in here as we move to the end of our show. We are going to get into that exclusive discussion here after our last two subjects. But let's get into these last two subjects because they are big ones in and of themselves. Google apparently tried to convince Meta to switch to its upcoming Android XR platform. You and I talked about this a little bit. It was an interesting way to see this news come out, right? I think it was The Information reported it, but I'll have David give you the rundown here in a minute. But then immediately Meta sort of commented that that wasn't the whole story and gave their own context here on exactly how this relationship is not coming together. So David, why don't you give us the context here?
Yeah, as Ian just mentioned, this started with a report in The Information saying that Meta had rejected Google's offer to team up and partner on Android XR, their upcoming operating system for headsets, the Samsung headset being the first headset that will use it, and that Meta said no. And so as Ian mentioned, immediately the CTO of Meta, Andrew Bosworth, came out and made a statement here. And here's his statement about the kind of confirms the story in a way, but also says that the way that the angle was looking at it wasn't quite taking in everything to account. And how this is quite an unreasonable request from Google when you look at the historical context. So here's what Meta CTO said. After years of not focusing on VR or doing anything to support our work in the space, Google has been pitching Android XR to partners and suggesting, incredibly, that we are the ones threatening to fragment the ecosystem when they are the ones who plan to do exactly that. We would love to partner with them. They could bring their apps to Quest today. They could bring the Play Store with its current economics for 2D apps and add value to all their developers immediately, which is exactly the kind of open app ecosystem we want to see. We would be thrilled to have them. It would be a win for their developers and all consumers, and we'll keep pushing for it. Instead, they want us to agree to restrictive terms that require us to give up our freedom to innovate and build better experiences for people and developers. We've seen this play out before, and we think we can do better this time around. So there's a lot going on in the background here that is being referred to in that statement. And let's give a little historical rundown here to start, as I did in the article. So back in 2018, Meta and Google both launched standalone VR platforms. You had Oculus Go, running the Oculus OS, as it was called at the time, and the Lenovo Mirage Solo, which ran Google's Daydream, which essentially was an Android XR. It was Android extended for headsets, just like Android TV is Android extended for TVs. And, you know, Android Automotive is Android extended for cars. But of course, not Meta is using Android as the basis for their Quest operating system, as it's now called. The open source core of Android, called AOSP, Android Open Source Project. And when you get something like a Pixel phone or even a Samsung Galaxy phone, you have AOSP at the core, but around that is a bunch of Google services and apps that Google will only provide to hardware makers that agree to certain terms. So back to the historical context there. Less than 2 years later, Daydream was abandoned and killed. They sent out tracked controllers to developers that could have turned the Lenovo Mirage Solo into a Quest competitor, and they never shipped it as a product. Meanwhile, Meta launched Quest, then Quest 2, then Quest Pro, then Quest 3, and in that time grew the Oculus platform, now called the Quest platform, to a scale of tens of millions of users, right? They've sold north of 20 million of those headsets. And so we flash back to last year, and now that the market's already proven, Google comes along and says, oh, we probably shouldn't have killed that Daydream thing. Let's try again. This VR thing is actually real. It's not a flop like we probably predicted it was. And so they have partnered with Samsung to provide Samsung an XR platform that is Android XR is what it's going to be called. So it's based on the AOSP core, but with Google services put around it, exactly like Daydream or exactly like what you get on a Pixel phone. And to be clear, I use a Pixel phone and I like it. So in the process of this, according to this information report and essentially confirmed by Meta CTO comments, Google went along to Meta and said, hey, you have this existing competing Android platform that's built on Android's open source core. Why don't you partner with us? And we'll take care of the core operating system stuff and the platform stuff. And you can basically just be the Samsung. You can have our software and add your own flair on top and become basically a hardware maker. And Meta obviously said no, because given the historical context, they would have difficulty trusting Google. And Google would now control the core engineering decisions at the core of the operating system when it comes to core technology. And Meta would have to put a Play Store on the Quest that doesn't just include 2D apps, but would also include 3D apps. And that's probably the real critical part there. So what Meta CTO has said in the past is that he has repeatedly asked Google to bring their Play Store of 2D apps to Quest. And in this statement here, he's saying that they could even keep their 30% cut, no Meta take. They would be able to sell 2D apps on the Play Store on Quest with the 30% cut, but Google's saying no. Google wants full cooperation. Google wants to control the operating system. And even in the information report, there was a really interesting word that to me reflected one of the reasons I think Meta would have rejected to this. They said that Meta could contribute to Android XR. So instead of Meta being able to drive the core technology. They would be asking Google, here's what we built, can we integrate it? And, you know, if that had happened, say, 4 years ago, Meta's, that point about innovation is really valid. Meta would have had to, for each new feature, fundamental feature they wanted to add to the platform, be it some of the things we've seen like hand tracking, or be it multimodal or inside out body tracking, a lot of these things they would have had to go through Google, as Google would still control the core. But all of that context put in place, what we're going to see based on this projection is these three distinct platforms in the future. We're going to see Apple Vision, Meta Quest, and Google's Android XR. Now, yes, in the mobile world, Google is the software provider and they have a bunch of hardware providers, but right now they have the exact same number of hardware companies on board as Meta. One, Google has Samsung, and Meta, as we will talk about soon, has LG. And the future is not yet written here. It is not clear who's going to win out. Just because Google won in mobile doesn't mean they're going to win in headsets. But of course, Google has the massive advantage that when they launch that platform on Samsung's headset, they will bring over the entire or the vast majority of the Google Play Store. They'll be able to integrate with your existing Android phone. You'll be able to bring your Google Chrome bookmarks and passwords and data over. And if you're a Google user, you will really, really like that ecosystem integration compared to Meta, where everything is separate.
Yeah, a lot of discussion there that David has summarized. A very complex situation to consider. All users want are apps that work and being able to contact their friends. And both these companies claim to be about like connecting you to others and getting you the world's information. But I have to put this, like, this disagreement in context of what's happening to the wider web. It feels like the web is eating itself. Google is in free fall over incorporating AI-generated results into their own results, making the quality of Google search worse over time. Meta, over on the other hand, you know, Facebook accounts, how many of those accounts are puppeted by nobody? They're not even operated by anyone actively, or they've been taken over by a bot and are just being operated as a ghost because the person has just abandoned the account and can't get logged into it anymore. I think that's happening in large numbers and just being unconfirmed, unreported. But the basis of that is I just don't see a whole lot of people saying I'm using Facebook for anything. I believe Instagram and WhatsApp appear to be very important parts of a lot of people's lives, but this core basis of Meta's Facebook's ecosystem seems to be struggling. And you've got those as the basis of the last generation of like mobile devices and mobile computing, and it's not working for them. They're both trying to create the next generation of personal computing, and Google is run by a bunch, it appears to be run by a bunch of VPs who have short-term incentives to try to get their bonuses and their money out of Google. And that's in direct opposition to Andrew Bosworth and Mark Zuckerberg, this two-person team that has been pushing Meta in a very specific direction here, with things like the Oculus accounts causing major headaches for people in the Oculus ecosystem. But it's very clear that those two people have been pushing decisions and steering Meta in a very specific direction for the better part of a decade now, while we've got, for lack of a better term, a bunch of bozos over at Google without any long-term vision for what this technology is going to do. And here we are with Google. I would imagine Google trying to overplay its hand here. They've been able to bring plenty of partners into submission with Android and Android phones. They've shipped the Pixel line. You're saying you're a Pixel user. You get features first out of Google, right? You get the first line of updates from them with all the fancy new features. They can't do it in VR. They can't go back to the well that they've already poisoned. Meta is going to smash you to smithereens if you try that.
Yeah, Google is going to have a huge difficulty here getting trust from developers and users. As we've said on this podcast before, when discussing the possibility of Google entering, imagine being a game developer and looking what happened with Stadia and Daydream and then betting the farm on Google. It's going to be something that developers have a tough time doing. users even. You know, imagine being a Stadia user and then coming along to this, or a Daydream user. Imagine you bought a Lenovo Mirage Solo thinking, you know, you saw Oculus Go and you saw Mirage Solo and you thought, well, you know, Google makes Android. They're the company behind it. I'm sure this will all go fine. And then you got kind of thrown away like that. It is just a huge question. Is this going to be a serious venture that Google puts a decade of work into and doesn't get distracted after 18 months and shut it down? Or is it going to really push hard and make this, you know, the next platform? I don't know yet. You know, I really don't know. It seems like it'll depend a lot on Samsung's success. Samsung's going to have a lot of advantages when it comes to, you know, their global hardware distribution, their ability to, you know, get a good deal on their own Samsung displays and first engineering information. But, you know, they're going to be going up against LG in that sense. A comparable situation is tablets, right? So Google abandoned Android tablets for a few years and they stopped making their own. And then they started making their own again with the Pixel tablet. But in that time, Amazon emerged and they became one of the largest tablet makers with their own Fire OS. And Fire OS, it works pretty much exactly like what Meta did. It takes the Android open source core and adds Amazon services and core technology on top of it in the same way that Meta has the Android open source. And so, you know, I wonder, did Google ever approach Amazon and say, well, please use our Play Store and our Google platform? Maybe they did, but Amazon obviously said no, and they've built a successful market. Now, to be clear, Amazon's market in tablets is basically where the cheap option. You know, you can buy Amazon Fire tablets that provide really, really good value and have Amazon services, but they don't really compete in the high end in the same sense. With Meta, this is an interesting strategy in that they are firing out the cheap headsets first party, but then, as we'll talk about soon, potentially going for the high end with their Quest platform. The last thing I'd say on this is that, you know, from a user perspective, if there was a magical way that these companies could somehow work together in a way that isn't just, as you say, Google overplaying their hand, where Google runs the whole show. If there was a way where they could somehow work together and have some sort of joint venture where they're making engineering decisions together and actually working on this as a joint project, unprecedented, but theoretically possible, if they could pull that off, that would be a serious, serious competition for Apple. If you could combine the strengths of Meta and the existing ecosystem of Google into one venture, that would make the people in charge of the Vision headset line in Apple pretty terrified, I think. That would be a serious, serious competition. But I don't think it's ever going to happen.
I wonder about OpenXR, whether that can be used as a trigger there, right? If both companies contributed to an OpenXR compatibility fund and devs could sort of deduct money from that fund for their projects, in order to offset the platform costs. And of course, you know, waive the platform costs, reduce them, because ultimately I think that's the scary thing that Meta is going to do to Google and to Apple, is when they start removing those fees or cutting them down in order to go the Nolan Sorrento route. That's, I don't know how others can match it. We've got one last subject here coming up very shortly, and then we will have our special guest, David. Anything you want to get into before we move to our last subject?
Yeah, I guess I'd just say Meta's big weaknesses against Google, if we haven't already said it. I do think that's important to point out, because we've said a lot of things against Google here, but let's be clear about what Meta lacks, and it is that existing ecosystem. It is that existing platform. Meta is building from scratch. You are not, you know, you open the Quest browser and you go to one of your favorite services and or Discord, say, and start logging in. You're going to have to go to your phone, go to your password manager, take your password and sign in. You do that on the Google headset and you're a Chrome user, your passwords are all going to be there ready to go. That is a big difference, something like that. And the fact that all of your existing Play Store apps will be there, that is a big difference. And Meta is going to have to try and fight tooth and nail against that. So the other thing I wonder, in the long term, will Google come out with a Pixel headset? Right now, we're only talking about a first or third party strategy. Will they have a first party strategy? Apparently, in the information report, Google has been talking to other hardware companies other than just Samsung to try and secure them, but they have not. Mm-hmm. And I imagine Google probably tried to get to LG as well, and LG has gone with Meta, which is our next topic. We're going to talk about that official partnership.
I like to imagine the conversations between these companies and the people who are in charge of these teams. And they're like, right, like all your people that build the VR hardware went and left for other companies. They went and got hired by Meta or they got hired by Apple. And now the people that are left are the people that are making phones. And they got to go like to their friends. Oh, man, the VP changed his mind again. You want to come back here? I can get you another 10% above what you went to Meta before. I don't have a big enough budget to get the three more engineers we need because they haven't given like it's just I imagine these real like how do you put together a team again for this after it's hysterical to me. If these conversations are anything like this, I would love to hear about them. Come into my DMs and tell me, because I just got to imagine these engineers at these companies that have stuck out places like Google just tearing their hair out at all the lost time that they've had. Let's get into this last subject.
Well, I think you're right in saying that, you know, we tracked the LinkedIn profiles at the time. A lot of the Daydream team did get hired by Meta. So it's funny to think that, you know, it's tragic to think actually that had Google pushed Daydream, what could it be today? I always wonder that. That's the thing I wonder almost every day. That's my Roman Empire. What would the Google Daydream profile or what would the Google Daydream platform be like in 2024 had Google not abandoned it and have to start again? But yes, if you don't have anything else to add, let's talk about this story.
Yeah. So Meta and LG officially confirming their partnership that we talked about a little bit previously, including next generation XR device development. So I'm going to let David explain this, give context, then we'll maybe have a little bit of discussion about what the stage is set here for the next few years of hardware. And then David's going to leave and go and publish a story for us. And then I'm going to have our guest come in here for a discussion here with you. So, David, why don't you break down exactly what is covered in this partnership?
Yeah, so this follows around 6 months of reports from South Korean news outlets that were claiming that Meta had partnered with LG for future Quest Pro headsets. And those reports indicated that the first headset, presumably will be called Quest Pro 2, but there is no confirmation of that, will arrive next year in 2025 for somewhere around $2,000. And so this remained in the realm of just kind of rumors or reports, whatever you want to call it, until last week when they officially confirmed a partnership, LG and Meta partnering on XR. And as Ian mentioned, that includes next-gen XR device development. That's a direct quote from their statement about their partnership. And interestingly, Mark Zuckerberg went over to South Korea to finalize this himself. He went to LG's headquarters in Seoul, and he was there with the CEO of LG, as well as the head of LG's TV division. And one of the earlier reports had indicated that there would be some kind of WebOS integration, WebOS being LG's TV division, in this partnership. And in the statement from the official partnership statement, they directly discuss that. They say LG envisions that by bringing together Meta's platform with its own content and service capabilities from its TV business, a distinctive ecosystem can be forged in the XR domain. So I think it's pretty much confirmed that LG is going to build Quest Pro 2, right? You know, they don't directly say that here, but we can essentially confirm that based on the reports in this. But the really interesting part is that this partnership may go beyond that and may have a software component. Because one of the things that Meta is sorely lacking, as we just discussed, is 2D apps. And what are the most important 2D apps on Vision Pro and on a Quest headset you might want in future? It's media watching. It's those streaming services like Disney Plus and Paramount Plus and Netflix and Apple TV Plus. And Meta would have a really hard time convincing a lot of these developers to build an app for Quest for that, because yes, they have a lot more users than Vision Pro, but whereas on Vision Pro you can basically just kind of tweak your existing iPad app a bit and use the same infrastructure and a lot of the same APIs, and there's this kind of great software development kit that you can use with Swift UI components, and Apple has really made it very clean and streamlined to build a windowed 2D app for Vision Pro. Quest is a bit of a mess where that's not the case at all. But if Meta can just piggyback on WebOS, if either you have a virtual LG TV that has all of these apps pre-installed on that giant floating virtual LG TV, or if they can just somehow integrate like a WebOS runtime into the Quest platform and distribute the apps individually on the store, they solve that problem. They solve that problem. They get, not only do they get LG to use its hardware engineering expertise to build Quest Pro headsets, so Meta doesn't have to be distracted by that and kind of do a half-ass effort like we saw with Quest Pro 1. They also would get a lot of the LG WebOS TV platform streaming services. This could be a pretty killer partnership for Meta. And it also, from a PR perspective, they can push it and say, look, you know, we're not this closed platform. Other companies can make headsets using our OS. And Google saying that it has, you know, it's a software provider. Well, they have Samsung and we have LG, as I was just pointing out. So a lot of aspects of this partnership, and this could be very fascinating from both a hardware, a software, and an industry perspective.
Yeah. The idea that part of the software platform might be owned by a different platform holder is a very, very interesting one. And obviously Quest Pro 2 is the obvious playground where Meta can try this on and it won't affect anything that happens in the main Quest 3 line in the next little bit. So they can protect their little VR console ecosystem while also letting LG play around a little bit with the high end in their long-term competition with Apple. And it does also help frame this longer-term play. People might look at this whole system and go, actually, Apple is way, way behind Meta. I think this partnership and this whole direction points out the way Meta is choosing to kind of push back at what Apple is doing. But also, I'm not getting the sense that they're really panicked in any way. This is just a shift of their direction, and they're going to come back at it again. Any comments you want to get into here?
Yeah, we have some skepticism from James O'Loughlin and TRMN8R. It was James O'Loughlin and ADR2T wondering if this might be like some of Meta's past partnerships. So, you know, this isn't the first time that Meta has partnered with a hardware company. Oculus Go was made by Xiaomi. The Rift S was co-designed and manufactured by Lenovo. And, you know, they've done these partnerships in the past. And obviously Gear VR was a Samsung product. To be clear, Oculus Go was manufactured by Xiaomi, but it was designed by Oculus. And so James O'Loughlin is rightly pointing out that those ended up as kind of dead product lines. The Go died because it didn't provide the positional tracking and controllers that people wanted. The Rift S was, you know, the ugly stepchild as soon as Quest got Link and eventually Air Link and obviously Virtual Desktop from Geek Odin. So they're wondering in the comments here, could this just be another throwaway partnership? And I don't think that's the case because, the Rift S's problem, the problems with the Rift S and the Go were very specific to those ventures, right? So the Rift S, the problem with the Rift S was that Quest existed too, and that realistically the Rift S was a rushed product that came out because they canceled Quest 2 and they didn't have Link ready by then, and they needed to replace the aging Rift that was by then 3 years old, right? It was a rushed out product for a specific need. The Go, its problem was that it ran a completely different platform than Quest. So when Quest came out, it was a completely different store, and it couldn't play any of the same content. So it wasn't like when Quest 3 comes out and Quest 2 still gets games, Go kind of died. This is going to be running, presumably, I mean, pretty much confirmed, the Meta Quest platform, right? It's going to be the same situation with like Quest 2 to Quest 3, where it runs things better, but it's running the same software, at least when it comes to VR games and such. So I don't see it being abandoned in the same way. I also think we're in a much more mature part of the cycle of VR as a technology over time, where we're past those throwaway partnerships. I suspect, based on just LG's expertise, you know, I'm sure everyone here knows someone who owns an LG TV and how great they are, and how serious Meta has been about this, how Apple Vision Pro has brought a new interest to the entire industry that means that partners like LG are going to put a lot more effort than, you know, Xiaomi or Lenovo ever put in. LG talked about this in their statement as being part of their vision for 2030. Like, one of their core pillars is that they want to be a major XR player, and they have bet that Meta is the pathway to do that.
All right. I think that's it for my thoughts. We've had a wonderful discussion here. I think I'm ready to have my guest get into the show here and have David exit here to publish a bit of news. So why don't you come in here, have our guest get in here, stick around in the comments. This will be one of the first times that we've broken news directly inside of our VR download studios here, the Upload VR studios. So thank you to our guest for joining us. Thank you for David for building this place. Thank you to our audience for tuning in. And yeah, it's been a big show, and don't leave yet, because we're going to get into this here in a second.
Thanks so much, everyone. So I'm exiting, but just to reiterate what Ian says, we're not ending the show. I am exiting, but our guests will be coming in. So yeah, thanks so much for everything we discussed this week. I can't wait to see you all next week again. Really great quality of discussion in the comments. And if you have any further thoughts or you're listening to this after, please also make a comment under the video. We will read it. So thanks, everyone, again. I'll see you next week.
All right. David disappearing from my reality right here. I'm seeing people in the comments saying that Meta is still down, so that would be a bummer that we they couldn't get in here if Meta is still down. I've been able to pop out of this studio and pop back in when there have been problems. Oh, just looking over here at the comments while we wait for the guest to join. Yeah, it's been a busy couple of weeks. It's nonstop these last few weeks, and David has been nonstop with the news machine covering everything that is going on. We've got a lot of the way this news is unfolding. We've got a lot of companies that are placing bets for the next few years. They're placing billions of dollars into manufacturers, into partners, into developers to try to get ready for the next phase, the next couple headsets here. I think the market has been proved out a little bit here by Quest 2, Quest 3, and now we've got Apple Vision Pro, as well as the likelihood of a Quest 3 Lite. And every one of these companies that we're discussing today is trying to get their ducks in a row for the very next generation. My guest is joining. Facebook is up for me. Some people are saying, and entitlement checks are down. I don't know. When is GDC? GDC is a couple weeks away. We're having Don and Henry go for us. I thought about whether I wanted to go. I opted out of going to GDC this year. Just unless something unexpected happens here in the next couple weeks, I think we're just going to have Don and Henry go. Hello. Are you here? Can you hear me? For them to join and catch up. They're here in our studio. Jeremy?
Jared.
Or Jeremy, sorry. All right. All right. You here?
Yep.
Are you standing or sitting?
I'm sitting, but in a tall chair.
Okay. Yeah, everyone's trying to figure out how tall you are right now. Reset your floor height. That should help. Yeah, we're sorry about the legs. Yeah, we're starting off this breaking news with you showing your legless avatars immediately here, which is a sign of exactly what month and year we're breaking this news. All right. Well, that's too small. That's on the floor. We can just go with you being super tall. All right. You here?
I'm here.
All right. Why don't you tell us who you are and why you're here today?
Hi, I'm Jared Cheshire. I'm one of the co-founders and the CEO of Pluto VR.
Yeah. How old is Pluto VR?
Pluto's been around for almost 10 years.
Tell me about the founding. What was the idea when you were founding? Because where you are today is not where you were when you were founded.
Yeah. So when we first started Pluto VR, our whole mission was to start with a purpose to help humanity transcend physical location. And when we set out on that journey, just to give you an idea of the landscape, the only devices we had access to for the most part was the Oculus Rift DK2. So there was no, you know, ecosystem for the most part. Everyone was doing all kinds of experiments, and mostly it was, you know, a lot of tech demos and no motion controls. So we did a lot of experiments, bringing in 6 DOF tracking, using mocap, a lot of experiments around shared presence and multi-user and multi-app experiments. It led us to a couple of different products that we've created. One is a communications client, and another is a streaming service called Plutosphere that gives you all the capabilities of an XR PC, even if you don't have a VR-capable PC.
Mm. And I'm seeing in our comments this joke here, don't tell them Guy Godin is here. Well, I actually invited Guy Godin here. Guy Godin is a regular viewer of our show. Just I assume he likes it. I assume that's why he's watching it. But I did specifically request Guy to come and tune into this show because I wanted to see his commentary today. Why don't you tell us specifically what's going on with Plutosphere right now?
Well, first off, we love Guy. We love virtual desktop. Lots of Plutosphere customers use virtual desktop to connect to their cloud computer. So a big fan. I also use virtual desktop quite often. But the reason why we're here is we're announcing the shutdown of the Plutosphere service. We've been kind of put into a position where we've got to shut things down, and we want to do that as transparently and as open as possible with the community. We've had an incredible amount of support from our customers and the community, and the potential for streaming XR use cases to standalone devices, we truly believe in, but we're in a position where we've got to shut things down. So we just want to let folks know and be as open as possible.
Yeah, so I appreciate you coming on our show to break that news to our audience. We just put the article out there publicly based on you talking to us, the statement that you've put out there, trying to explain what you can about this situation. Guy Godin there in the comments immediately responding, saying it sucks that Meta is blocking you guys from being on the store. Let's talk about this situation, right? Guy Godin, in our comments, the creator of Virtual Desktop, and I'll recap. Guy, correct me if I'm wrong, your story before we get into Plutosphere's story here. But Guy was out there very early with a PC VR streaming solution from Virtual Desktop to VR headsets, and was immediately forced to remove that feature and put it on SideQuest. So he was able to let a lot of people use their PC VR games on their Quest headsets years before Meta officially supported it. Then a few months before Meta officially supported their own link feature, they allowed Guy Godin to put PC VR streaming directly into his app. We actually broke that here at uploadvr.com, and it's one of the previous big stories that we've been able to get out there. It was a big win for a lot of users out there to suddenly be able to have this utility that they've already purchased in their library overnight be able to stream PC VR content. And then, of course, Meta offered their own solution, which Guy Godin is now competing against with his app on an ongoing basis. Your app went a step further. It virtualized the computer itself. It put it in the cloud. However, somewhere in the period of about 2021, Meta put a restriction into its store content that said, if you're streaming VR content to a Quest, you have to have physical access to the machine. This obviously, you knew about this restriction, and you tried to make PC VR streaming work anyways. What happened?
Yeah, so pretty much immediately after putting out our earliest version of Plutosphere, there was a content restriction put in place that you just described, which is that the cloud streaming capabilities were essentially restricted, and that you needed to have physical access to the computer that you're experiencing whatever XR content on. And so we saw virtual desktops experience and challenges, and we used virtual desktop and recommended our users use virtual desktop for quite a while, and still do, in order to be able to connect to their instances, which did work. But the content restrictions put in place by the policies have really severely impacted our ability to be able to feel supported or to be able to do any significant release or marketing, because we want to play within the bounds of what the restrictions are. And what we've heard is that the reason why the restrictions exist is to ensure that people have a really solid user experience. So we focused on making sure that people have really good connectivity before they're able to connect. And if they don't, we let them know what the requirements are. And we played within the bounds of the restrictions there. But we saw no traction, essentially, for being able to get support for the use case, which pretty severely limited our forecast and projections in order to be able to serve the amount of people that are out there that we believe could take advantage of services like this. So in a lot of ways, yeah, we were severely limited and not able to grow at the pace that we had figured we'd be able to, even with conservative projections.
Yeah. There's a very obvious question, I think, from your audience, the people who have used Plutosphere, asking about their tokens that they've already purchased. What happens? For those unfamiliar, Plutosphere approached this PCVR streaming idea from the idea of like an arcade. You basically get tokens that you put in the machine to get access for time to stream your PCVR games like Half-Life Alyx directly from the cloud to your standalone VR headset. What happens in this shutdown situation to those tokens?
I'm sorry, I just missed a bit of what you said. You broke up.
Sorry, what happens to people's tokens that they've already purchased?
Yeah, so the first step that we're taking is we're turning off commerce, so people are no longer able to purchase tokens. All of the tokens that people currently have on their account are valid and can be used for the period of time that we're continuing to operate the service for people that have access to what they already have access to. So we're going to look and see how long we're going to be able to do that for. We're currently aiming for 30 days. So people's tokens are currently valid, and we recommend you utilizing them as soon as you are able to. And we're going to be coming out with more specific details as far as how long we're going to be able to operate things for. But yeah, tokens are no longer on sale, and current tokens are still valid and can be used as long as the service is available.
And the service is going to go offline unless something unexpected happens here in the near future. Let's talk about what happened. It seems to me like you're stuck. Let's take a step back to our beginnings, right? I think about the term bandwidth riot in Ready Player One. It was a throwaway line in the Ready Player One movie from Steven Spielberg about the bandwidth riots. But it seems to me like you are a startup stuck between Amazon Web Services on one side and Meta on the other, during a period in which all the biggest companies in the world are paying for bandwidth and they're paying for server space and time. And this is the environment in which you tried to launch one of the most aggressive ways to use cloud services. You talked about like South Korea. Talk to me about the journey with South Korea and what you tried to do there and what that represented to you. And then we're going to come back to this idea of bandwidth riots.
Yeah, so pretty early on, as we started experimenting with streaming XR use cases to standalone devices, we wanted to see what the forecast was going to look like for the different areas where bandwidth and connectivity is getting better and better. And one of the places that has the best internet connections and geographical density closest to infrastructure is South Korea. So I spent a significant amount of time in South Korea field testing Plutosphere alongside and before our rollout to see what the capabilities would be in other regions. And one of the things that's really interesting is when you utilize 5G connectivity and you connect to 5G infrastructure, you can get into single-digit latency territory. And it doesn't use the public internet to connect from your headset to this infrastructure. It uses different connection methods that are defined in the 5G specification. And so we got this really interesting peek into the future that we very strongly believe in which compute resources start to become more closely available to users. The connections from devices utilizing these 5G connections get really fast and very low latency and prioritized. And that gave us the confidence that we knew that like this category, this area, this technology has a massive amount of potential. And so that's what really set us out to pursue that, you know, and provide for the market of folks that don't have an XRPC in the meantime. But it gave us a ton of confidence. And I used PlutoSphere in like all kinds of ridiculous scenarios, like in, you know, a McDonald's playing like Half-Life Alyx or like in a park on these 5G connections with single-digit latency characteristics to the server infrastructure that's then, you know, sometimes, you know, only a few miles away. So it really let us peek into the future.
Yep. All right.
The bandwidth required is going to be available to most folks over a period of time, north of 80% of the population in most areas. And so we really believe in the use case. We're just early.
Yeah, we really believe in the use case. We're really just early. People are talking about the comment. I will say you're just a little soft-spoken, or your headset or your mouth is just a little bit further from the headset than mine is. So his volume is just a little bit lower than mine. Nothing we can do about that on a live show when you're dealing with this many different things. We'll try to get to that in the future. That reflects a comment from science fiction. The future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. And ultimately, you've got companies like Meta and Google, Meta getting criticized left and right for only launching Horizon Worlds in the United States or in a limited number of countries. And then Apple, of course, launching its headset only in the United States. It's tough to go global at any scale, whether you're the largest company in the world or the smallest company. But what you are doing and the technology you're working on is the very next step in what everyone wants out of these devices. People want Half-Life Alyx, but they want it in the standalone form factor. They don't want to have to go out and buy a PC. Now, granted, there's plenty of people out there that love their PC, and they're going to spend $5,000 to kit out and have the best possible experience in games like Flight Simulator and Half-Life Alyx and Elite Dangerous on max settings, all these amazing PC experiences. But there's plenty of people out there that are going to go get a headset if they can go and immediately flip a switch on a simple way of streaming it from the cloud. At a quality, and that's what PlutoSphere tries to do. Explain in the simplest terms you can the business situation you faced here that's causing you to shut down, because I think our audience is aware enough to know that the end goal is right. They're there to agree with you that you guys were on the right path. The question is, how did you get the timing wrong? And what made the timing wrong for you?
Yeah, so for us, one of the initiatives that we had was to lower the amount that it costs to be able to operate PlutoSphere and to minimize the amount of cost that it costs users. And so one of the solutions to that problem, we're introduced to that solution, which is to enter into an agreement to pre-commit to an amount of cloud spend over the course of the next, 5 years or so. And so what we did was we entered into an agreement with a third-party reseller utilizing what our projected cloud spend would be. And that was a mistake, because our forecast and our roadmap expected us to be able to launch in the app stores, to be able to market, and for us to be able to address the amount of folks that are out there. Without being able to do that, we're behind the curve. We haven't been able to meet the commitments that we have for our cloud spend. And We've been trying to renegotiate the terms of that for the last year or so. So we kind of hit an impasse. And at this point, based on advice and recommendations from our council, we canceled the contract and have been given basically an invoice for the entire amount of what our cloud spend was meant to be for the next 5 years, which is just something we can't afford. So we're forced to shut down PlutoSphere at this point. And so, yeah, it really is kind of what you described. It's being stuck between two restrictions and an agreement that we haven't been able to uphold on our side of things. So the lesson to learn there is, like, I would not recommend, you know, entering into those types of agreements. And, you know, my recommendation out to other entrepreneurs and companies and startups is, like, that's a mistake. Keep that in mind.
Yeah. So we've got you on the record here in front of our audience owning the mistake. I appreciate that that sort of clear communication. Guy Godin immediately responding with oof. You know, like, he feels it, right? As someone who's in this market with you, doing what you're doing just in a different way, he feels it. He understands, I think, exactly what happened here. The thing, I think the final question here, the question that you have the spotlight of a couple hundred people and the thousands of people who will watch this in stream after, is, what do you have to say about the competitiveness here of these giants and what it means for a startup ecosystem or a software developer?
Yeah, the biggest challenge that I have in the struggle is, there's a lot of talk about open ecosystem and supporting innovation and creating these scenarios where people can be able to experiment and support technology and startups. But in reality, it doesn't feel like that. So I think in a lot of ways, the landscape talks open, but feels a little bit more hostile than that. So just keep that in mind when you're setting out to do something. The open ecosystem is something that I appreciate. We do a lot of contributions and work in, like, open standards. We do our best to contribute to open source. But at the end of the day, you really are under the rules of, like, the content platforms that are out there. And so while you want to have an optimistic outlook, you also want to consider that the ecosystem isn't necessarily going to support you. It's something that's a little bit more hostile than what I would expect.
That's really rough, and I appreciate the openness. You have been talking to me through this journey. I've been in communication with you for a little while here, ready to, you know, at the beginning of that discussion journey with you, you were expecting to be able to launch. You were expecting to, you know, in your communications with me, telling me that you're ready to get App Store. And it seemed like Meta was going, at least from your communications with me, you seemed like we were going to get virtual desktop on steroids, is how I would describe cloud VR streaming when it actually arrives, right? If you can remove the PC from the equation and still get Half-Life Alyx from the cloud and it still feels pretty good, that's a dream come true for a lot of people out there. And you were amped, you were ready. It apparently seemed to fit with your timeline. And then we have the complete 180 from that, the flip scenario just a few months later. That's how quickly it can happen to startups and to companies in this space. I want to say thank you to our audience for their comments. I'm seeing Free Sky mentioning thank you for hosting those VR meetups back in the day in Seattle. Those were great times. And I'm sure that there are people even in our audience or finding this afterwards who have tried the various iterations of your technology over the years in your explorations. I think there is probably one more question. Tell me the names of all the founders and what you're planning to do next.
Yeah, so the founders of Pluto VR are myself, Jared Cheshire, Forrest Gibson, John Vici, and Jonathan Geibel. And at the moment, John and I are the folks that are still involved in Pluto VR. Jonathan and Forrest have gone on to do other things and are, I think, in the audience. And exactly what we're going to do next, we're shutting down the PlutoSphere service, but Pluto VR will continue to live on. We're figuring out exactly what that means, but we have a lot of passion around our purpose still to help humanity transcend physical location. And we've been doing a lot of work in open source and open standards and still very much believe in that open ecosystem of the ability to kind of do anything with anyone, no matter where you are. And I think the way to be able to do that is through multitasking and through open standards. So being able to get into the AR use cases and bridge between virtual and augmented reality, I think there's a lot of potential there. So yeah, Pluto VR will continue on, but Plutosphere, the service, is imminently being shut down due to the circumstances surrounding it.
Maybe we'll see another iteration. Maybe something unexpected will happen. I don't, you know, it's one of these things where there's no call to action here. We wish there was, right? Like there that there was something people could do. This is a shutdown, and this is you owning it. I'm always appreciative when founders, when people can come in here and talk about what happened. And I, at least in my 10 years reporting on this, more than 10 years reporting on VR, this would be, in my experience, the most upfront a startup has ever been with just saying, this is what it is, and worse. I mean, I assume you're sorry.
We're on some level. Sorry. And like our community, we're heartbroken. We have a really vibrant and active community of people that I feel like depend on what we provide for their, you know, ability to play exclusive PC VR content and experiment with things that are kind of on the future horizon. And they're the reason why we've got to the point that we've got. And so we're all incredibly heartbroken and sorry that we're not able to continue to provide the service that we would really like to. It's tearing us up. So yeah, we're really sorry, and we're trying to figure out whatever it is we can do to do goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, I'm seeing Blair in the comments here is talking about getting on Plutosphere just a few weeks ago with you guys. Yeah, I assume that's, you know, that's not a surprise to you. Like that's, when a startup shuts down, it shuts down suddenly. We had startup last year, right? Just go from an operational company to dead on the PlayStation VR platform. And this, I think what's so killer here is this wasn't a game. This is a core feature of future VR headsets. And it has been reserved, at least from my perspective, as a like, if this is me putting my commentator hat on, it appears to have been reserved space for the platform holders. And that means that it's not a place for a small company like yourself to play in. And that doesn't seem fair or right in the grand scheme of things. But we'll see how this plays out. We'll see if there's anything unexpected that happens. We will, of course, have the latest for you on uploadvr.com. Guy Godin here putting in quote the words open ecosystem at the end of our show. I think that is a good quote to pull out. Thank you so much to our audience for tuning in. Please like, comment, subscribe. Consider becoming a member to support our work directly. If you've appreciated this work and the other work we do to bring you the commentary and the real news from the very core of the VR industry, please do support our work. It means a tremendous amount to us. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for giving us this breakdown. And I'm sorry about this tough day for you and your team. We'll see you in the future.
I really appreciate it, Ian. Thanks.